This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Not Alone, Revelations, Not Alone, Book 6. Written by Craig A. Falconer. Performed by James Patrick Cronin.
Part 1. Lilliput. There is nothing constant in this world but inconsistency. Jonathan Swift. P-99. Landing site, Solar City, Sanctuary. Daylight, or perhaps some artificial alien imitation of it, streamed into the saucer-like spacecraft as if the vehicle was a passenger plane soaring through Earth's skies. But while Dan McCarthy's initial sight of Sanctuary's surface had revealed a surprisingly Earth-like landscape, and while the air that mixed with the craft's controlled atmosphere as the door opened was clearly breathable to his human lungs, the similarities between his home world and the one on which he now found himself ended there. Fear and wonder had competed within Dan and his fellow passengers for the past few minutes, with his sister-in-law, Tara, and his trusted archaeologist friend, Billy Kendrick, both gazing in slack-jawed amazement when Sanctuary's colossal pyramids first came into view. Had their craft not been pulled off course by an irresistible force of unknown and potentially hostile origin, this wonder would have been the purest any of them had ever felt. The planet's pyramids, very clearly constructed by an intelligent race rather than the product of any natural geology, were comfortably larger than any on Earth. Despite this, however, they were utterly dwarfed by a statue so large that its scale was difficult for the humans to comprehend. They had so far seen only the back of this statue, a stone-like idol of a bipedal humanoid with familiar proportions, and they could only speculate as to what kind of facial features the front would reveal. The craft's final approach had taken it away from the pyramids and off to the other side of the statue, where remarkable skyscrapers of crystal-like glass shimmered under the bright sun. A huge circle, marked in a manner not entirely unlike that of a squarer helipad on Earth, ultimately proved to be the craft's landing spot. The humans on board felt no relief as the unnerving pull of the magnet-like force that had carried them here faded, though, and nor did their pilot. Leisha, their intrepid friend from the race of extraterrestrials known as Messengers, who called the distant world of New Kerguelen home, wore the most concerned expression any of them had ever seen on his almost human face. The alien, slightly shorter than Dan and with a browless face dominated by large, caring eyes that lay in stark contrast to the cool hue of his bluish-silver skin, had internalized and adopted many nonverbal modes of expression during his time on Earth, from smiles and waves to his trademark slow nod. The look on Leisha's face as the craft settled on this new alien world, despite his efforts to contain it, was one of sheer terror. His usual ability of short-distance teleportation was somehow unavailable, blocked by a force he understood just as little as the one that had pulled his ordinarily responsive craft out of his control. Unseen forces prevented Leisha from flashing his passengers back to the mothership in which they had reached Sanctuary, through a mysterious portal-like gateway on the edge of New Kerguelen's atmosphere which they all now regretted crossing. Wherever they were, escape seemed decisively out of their hands. But when the craft touched down and its entrance ramp descended to the ground below and the doorway slowly opened, all of which occurred without instruction from either Leisha or any of the humans, everyone inside became aware of just whose hands their lives did now rest in. The sudden presence of a waist-high extraterrestrial, humanoid in appearance, and flanked by around 20 more of the same kind, stunned three of the craft's crew into silence. Only Dan McCarthy, perhaps uniquely prepared for this moment, having been the first human to encounter any of Leisha's kind, retained enough composure to address the pint-sized alien. Billy and Leisha stood slightly to the side, leaving Dan and Tara, leading figures in Earth's Interspace Contact Agency and veterans of interspecies engagement, to stare down their hosts. "We come in peace," Dan said. Not having truly expected a reply, and not even having considered that one might be non-telepathically delivered in a vocalization he could comprehend, even Dan was lost for words when the alien opened its mouth and responded in the language of Earth. And even then, the nature of this reply had nothing on its meaning.
"They are back,"
the remarkable creature exclaimed, speaking aloud in perfect English as it gazed up at Dan and Tara with wide and adoring eyes.
"Our gods have returned."
Time seemed to stand still in Dan McCarthy's mind as he gazed down at the English-speaking alien before him. The being appeared keen to respect the threshold of the craft, having stopped at the doorway before opening his mouth to speak. In keeping with the alien's general appearance, height aside, that mouth was far more human than was Leisha's or those of his fellow messengers. None of the aliens outside could have been an inch over 4 feet tall, and some looked like they might have fallen below 3. Their skin tone was less obviously alien than Leisha's, their whitish gray lacking the striking otherness of his silvery blue, and their hands likewise had more in common with Dan's than Leisha's. Where each of Leisha's hands had 2 broad finger-like divisions and a highly dexterous oversized thumb, cruelly derided by some on Earth as hands akin to those of a genetically altered lobster, these aliens instead sported 3 fingers and a perfectly scaled thumb. This newly discovered race, lacking a name and already being considered by Dan's baffled mind simply as the Smalls, would have looked quite human if they were scaled up, were it not for the fact that their heads were slightly, but very noticeably, more spherical. The scene before Dan looked almost like something from a young child's drawing of a human crowd scene, with the heads more circular than oval and the scaling appearing to be off. The visual was remarkable, from the detail of the leader's face to the height differences of the other Smalls behind him, right up to the almost unfathomable size of the skyscraper-like towers that served as a backdrop to it all. Above and beyond what Dan was seeing, however, it was what he and his friends had just heard that really set his heart racing. Upon considering the situation, and knowing that the unseen and untrustworthy race of so-called architects, who had deceived Leisha's kind for thousands of years, had created the gateway that had just brought him to Sanctuary, Dan wasn't particularly amazed that the Smalls could communicate with him. After all, the remarkably advanced architects had provided uplift technologies to the messengers, which enabled telepathic communication between races who had evolved untold millions of miles apart. The circumstances which had brought Dan and his friends across the gate from New Kerguelen to Sanctuary in a desperate attempt to restore a peace shattered by the discovery of that gate itself included 2 linked discoveries which, at least, provided a modicum of context. The architects had created a gateway between Earth and New Kerguelen, just as they had created the one between New Kerguelen and Sanctuary, and on both Earth and New Kerguelen, they had left behind ancient transcripts for the benefit of future observers of their own kind. Within the past few days, Dan's friends and allies had discovered new transcripts on each planet, which referred to a sanctuary world that could be used to relocate species from either planet in the event of a true planetary emergency. What Dan was learning now, or at least what he was coming to assume, was that the Smalls' home world had at some stage faced just such an emergency, and that the architects, for reasons he knew better than to consider altruistic, had relocated them here. This didn't come close to explaining everything, but gave Dan's mind a starting point from which it could begin attempting to contextualize the rest.
"Come with us," the Smalls' leader smiled. "Our principal awaits." "From high he guards,"
the alien's 20-strong backing crew repeated in perfect unison, apparently responding in this rote manner to the very mention of their ruler. Their voices varied in pitch and timbre, but each smiled keenly and warmly. Stranded in an immobilized spacecraft on a world that defied belief, Dan and his friends had little choice but to acquiesce. Who exactly the Small's principal was, and from where he guarded what, would doubtless be revealed in the coming minutes and hours. Dan McCarthy knew that any hope of finding answers to the bigger questions and of ever again seeing the smiles of his wife Emma and their baby daughter Piper depended on retaining the favor of these Smalls and winning the favor of whoever ruled over them. Beckoning his friends forward with his hands and deciding to remain conservatively silent for now, Dan stepped across the craft's threshold and onto the ramp that would lead him to the surface of Sanctuary. Oh well, he thought to himself, gulping away as much fear as he could. At least they seem friendly.